dictation is Spicer's method.
Mm-hmm.
Blazer's might be called the open space poem. Is that fair?
That's what I called it.
Yeah.
The open space poem. Because in it, that's the open space poem is also tied to the idea of seriality, right? Because it's what comes into the space, and you create a space in the poem for what is going on all around you. So it's time bound. It's you're attentive to what's happening in the culture. That goes back to Pound. We have to know what's happening. It sounds like an off-the-cuff remark, but actually it's not. It's kind of a directive.
Mm-hmm.
You know? If you have a very, very stable worldview that, in your opinion, you think is fixed, then you might not need to know what's happening, because your world picture is stable, right? But if you don't have that, then you do have to know what's happening. And that's also, I think, part of the 20th century that Robin came to join after he went to Berkeley. So the serial poem, the open space poem, would be a poem where the poet gives space to and is attentive to, in a sense, assembles in what's going on around him or her. And of course, it's curated. How could it not be? You know. You want to know where the poet is. Well, the poet's inside there, and the poet is making the selection. But, it's he, in this case, it's a he, is not the only voice, and sometimes not even the dominant one in that space.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a movable space. It has to keep, evolving and going somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Without closing itself off in advance, who gets in, who gets out.
Hence the phrase open.
Yeah.
So I'm immediately going to the subtitle of projective verse, which is composition by field.
Yeah, sure.
So synonymous or similar or?
Similar, I think. Yes, it's how the field is managed. I have heard, I believe it was Marjorie Perloff quite some years ago, who described a Frank O'Hara poem as, I do this, I do that. So, I'm working by memory here.
Which is great. No, I just love that. And it's like a perfect description of New York School, or especially as in O'Hara's hand.
Now with that, what you're doing, if you're moving through a field, is you're following the bouncing ball, you're following the voice, you're following the poet through the field, right? And there is a path through the field. I think you might say that's also so true with Olson in many poems, if not all. You follow the perspective. There is a perspective. Now, to say there isn't one in Robin, that's false. Of course there's a perspective. He is there. It's a Blazer poem. But at the same time, the performance of it, the theater of it, is not so much focused on the poet leading you through a space. It's a space of assembly.
He's a little bit in the background.
Mm-hmm. More so than maybe,
Maximus.
Maximus, yeah.
And Frank O'Hara.
He's more like a minimus.
Well, then of course that was Creeley, and Creeley mm-hmm. was a companion.
Mm-hmm.
Not the same way as his great companions, but a companion nonetheless, and a force behind the 1963
Absolutely,
Vancouver yeah. Poetry yeah. Conference. And
he sure was. And Blazer had a very, very high regard for Creeley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And didn't he write the introduction to The Holy Forest? Isn't there
Yes.
You're right.
There's
a foreword.
Yes,
or
there
an
is. Yes, that's right. Right. Yes, right. That's correct. Yeah, yeah.
So we go back into the chronology. We left Robin in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
Where he has taken all that he learned from Berkeley and from his from the rest of the Berkeley Renaissance and his experience in Boston with all the poets he was in touch with there. And there are two companions of Blazer's, literally and figuratively speaking, that irk Robert Duncan to no end, and that would be Persky and Nerval.
Yeah.
Maybe not in that order.
Yeah. Well, I think Stan was just cheeky. And probably he antagonized Duncan by acting out, you know, Spicerian mischief. I think of it as mischief at this point. He was really young. He was a teenager when he first sort of stumbled into the Spicer circle, though maybe stumbled is not the right word for Stan. He seems to have an absolute nose for these sorts of things, where he could, you know, find out who's really interesting and important in a given scene and go for it. So Persky annoyed Duncan, and that was a problem. Nerval, as far as I can tell, that dust-up with Robin over the translations of Les Chimères was a fight about poetry. But it was also buttressed by a lot of other peripheral things. There had been bad blood, there had been feuding, there had been bad feeling all, you know, for a while before the Nerval translations came out. Persky was one. Duncan and Jess didn't take to him, or they felt that maybe he insulted them on certain occasions, or, you know, that he was too Spicer, and just never quite, you know, got along with Spicer. So there was that. And then there was the personal dimension. There was a one-night stand with Jess and Robin, and that didn't help matters.
Can you tell that story?
I can, because he gave me permission to do it. Normally I don't go for the dirt, but this one he actually told me once he wanted people to know about, especially, you know, when Jess was gone.
Jess was Duncan's partner.
Yes, Jess was Duncan's partner.
And Duncan was away, mm-hmm, and sent Robin a letter.
Yeah.
Maybe you could take it from that
point. Yeah, he sent Robin a letter describing his adventures, and included in those adventures was a sexual,
liaison. An assignation.
Yes.
Yes.
So as Robin tells the story, he went over to Jess's house for dinner and handed Jess the letter from Duncan without reading it.
And without opening the letter?
Without opening it or reading it, and knowing that Duncan had talked about his liaison. And Jess read it and didn't say anything. And when Robin saw it, he read it himself, he realized that Jess had been hurt. And so they commiserated. So, yes, that didn't turn out so well in the end. Duncan was furious because Jess spilled the beans. He told everything when Duncan got back. That didn't help matters, like the vitriol, you know. There was also the wounds that had been kind of building up. I know that Kevin Killian told me that Duncan was offended because Spicer and Robin and I think Landis had a little reading group and he wasn't invited. This was when Robin first came to San Francisco.
Landis Everson.
Yeah, Landis Everson.
So,
yeah, or you might be right, Everson, I'm not sure. But that was also, so there were like a whole series of incidents, right, that had been building up. And then the other thing, and I think maybe this had as much weight as all of them put together, I'm guessing here, that Robin was becoming his own poet. He wasn't just an acolyte anymore, you know?
How dare he?
How dare he? Yeah, how dare you assert yourself, yeah, right?
You're the student.
You're the student, you're the reader, you're my ideal reader. You're the one who's supposed to be. And Robin was extremely, this is documented in the correspondence between them from Boston, when he was in Boston. He was extremely deferential to Duncan and Jess, extremely deferential. And so when he began to stretch and flex a little bit as a poet and begin to create these poems,
didn't, you know, sit well with the king.
Didn't sit very well.
The king, yeah, of the world.
Didn't sit very well with the king of the world. No, no, it didn't, no.
And do you think that Persky is egging him on or
oh, sure. Yeah, yeah, you know, yeah. I mean, just Persky's presence was enough to,
right,
to irritate Duncan, mm-hmm. because Robin fell hard for Sam,
mm-hmm.
and Duncan felt slighted. He felt that he was, you know, turning away from him and Jess and preferring Persky, who was a mischief maker and a bit of a pop stirrer.
Gotta watch out for those guys from Chicago.
Yes, indeedy.
They're trouble.
Yeah, those handsome sailors. So I think those things informed it, but there's another serious issue too, that I do think there is a difference in poetics, you know, between Duncan's sense of translation and Robin's. And when Robin published those Chimera translations, that was Spicerian translation, you know, that Duncan would have registered that. Things don't connect, they correspond, all that stuff with After Lorca, you know. You don't give the literal translation. And that's actually in a letter that in which Robin replied to Duncan's criticisms. Dear Robert, if you want a literal translation, see the Penguin.
The Penguin.
The Penguin copy of Nerval's. Oh, you know, like that sort of
wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, that's right.
But so, as
yeah.